of wives. Sahasranam of thousands. Sahasrani thousands. Dasha, ten. Abhavan, there were. Asantanika, quite capable of begetting sons. Cha, and. Api, although. Ripaha, the king. Na, not. Leve, obtained. Tasu, in them. Sandatim, a son. So translation. This Chitraketu had 10 million wives. But although he was capable of producing children, he did not receive a child from any of them. By chance, all the wives were barren. So you can repeat. This Chitraketu had 10 million wives. But although he was capable of producing children, he did not receive a child from any of them. By chance, all the wives were barren. So there's no purport to this text, so we'll read the next text, which has a purport. Text 12. Upardharya vayo janma vidyaishvarya shriyadibhiki sampanasya gunai sarvash chintabhanja paterabhut. Chitraketu, the husband of these millions of wives, was endowed with a beautiful form, magnanimity, and youth. He was born in a high family, he had a complete education, and he was wealthy and opulent. Nevertheless, in spite of being endowed with all these assets, he was full of anxiety because he did not have a son. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. It appears that the king first married one wife, but she could not bear a child. Then he married a second, a third, a fourth, and so on. But none of the wives could bear children, in spite of the material assets of Janmaishvarya Shuta Shri, birth in an aristocratic family with full opulence, wealth, education, and beauty. He was very much aggrieved because, in spite of having so many wives, he had no son. Certainly his grief was natural. Grahastha life does not mean having a wife and no children. Chanakya Pandit says, Putra hinam graham shunyam. If a family man has no son, his home is no better than a desert. The king was certainly most unhappy because he could not get a son, and this is why he had married so many times. Kshatriyas especially are allowed to marry more than one wife, and this king did so. Nonetheless, he had no issue. So, Om Raghunatha Vinanda Shah Gananjana Shalakya Chakshur Nidhikam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. This is many, many topics in this particular verse. But I just want to mention not one of the main topics, but just something that Prabhupada quotes here. He quotes from Chanakya Pandit. Prabhupada said Chanakya Pandit is not a pure devotee, but he's giving what's called Niti Shastra. That means ordinary rules of ordinary society. So we don't take his statements as absolute. We can take them as advice in our lives, but it's not that if you break Chanakya Pandit's instructions that you're a demon or something like that. It's not like Prabhupada's instructions. So this particular injunction here, that if people don't have a son and their house is like a desert, that applies basically if they're not devotees. But if someone's a devotee and they're using their household life to preach Krishna consciousness, certainly we cannot consider that their house is like a desert or their home life is like a desert, because they're engaging in Krishna service. It has some purpose. The point of the desert is that the desert really, well, ultimately we understand the desert does have a purpose. It's, you know, accepting the earth's sinful reactions because Indra dumped him off on him after he killed the Brahmin. But anyway, there's a There are certain purposes to a desert. I mean, even ecologically or whatever, there are certain purposes to a desert. But for this particular example, it's understood in the example desert means it has no purpose, but someone who is engaging their lives in preaching Krishna consciousness, they certainly have a purpose. Whether, you know, they're married or not married, whether they have children or don't have children, or even like it's the statement here about a barren woman. You know, sometimes I've heard certain other ladies who have had children criticize women who have not had children as being barren. I mean, it's an insult. I mean, even devotee women saying, she's just a barren woman. Like that. You remember that, Brother Krishna Kriya? It's like arrows. It's not like that, because if one is engaged in Krishna consciousness, they may have had children, not have children. They may be old, they may be young, they may be black, they may be white, they may be purple, chartreuse. It doesn't matter. You know, they're engaged in Krishna consciousness. And their life is very useful. So this is an extremely important point to note, to understand this, because I know that sometimes this verse is used to criticize devotees, you know, putrahinam graham shunyam. And, you know, Prabhupada actually said at one point, he gave a statement that some householders were asking him for some advice, and Prabhupada said, you know, if you decide, you know, the purpose is not to have children, then just engage in preaching Krishna consciousness. So it's not. And, you know, having children also is Krishna conscious, because one can, give the children Krishna consciousness. One can bring up a pure devotee like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who's a ray of Vishnu. So, I mean, if something is engaged in Krishna consciousness, it's never considered worthless, useless, or like a desert. That's the point. Whether it's children, not children, or whatever you're doing, if you engage in helping people come to Krishna consciousness, then, anyway, this verse doesn't apply. Okay. That's the first point. It's not one of the main points in this particular, with this particular two verses. The main point is that Chitraketu wanted to have a son. So let's examine his motivations for having a son. I mean, of course, there's ordinary motivations. You know, you just want to have a son and then grandchildren you can enjoy. It gives you sort of a purpose in life. It's interesting. It gives you sort of a purpose in life to have children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. And we find sometimes, you know, people spend all their lives visiting the children, the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren, and the great-great-great-grandchildren, like that. So this is sort of happiness. Why is it? Because the children are actually, they're just like expansions of yourself. They're like little cells of you. Oh, he has your nose. She has your hair. Like that. So that's one reason. But I think in the case of Chitraketu, it's not quite so mundane. In the case of Chitraketu, he's interested basically in two things Kshatriyas are interested in. One is, and we did mention this last night, of continuing the dynasty, because that particular dynasty is bred, you know, the king's dynasty, the Kshatriya dynasties, they're bred to produce qualified kings, qualified rulers. I mean, that's a main consideration when Kshatriyas are married, is the breeding, you know, the genetics. Of course, another consideration that's very important is making alliances with other kingdoms. You see this in many cases, in the Mahabharata, you see this in many, many different instances, how, you know, Kunti Bhoj and like that. And she of course, was married to Pandu, and so that was cemented there. And then, of course, the Yadu dynasty and the Kuru dynasty was united by that particular arrangement. And then also in the case of Muhammad, when he wanted to become very powerful, when his first wife died, he married princesses, if you can call the princesses from the tribals princesses. Anyway, he married princesses from all the different tribes, and that sort of united all the Arabs at that time and gave him the power where he could enter into Mecca and eventually take over Mecca and establish his religion, you know, monotheistic religion. So this is, it's a political strategy too. So another reason for Kshatriya is getting married. So anyway, so they want to continue the dynasty, so they'll be, you know, the primogeniture, the oldest son can take over the kingdom, and it'll be, he'll be sure of the longevity of his dynasty. Even, what is it, even in my family, my brother said, you know, because my brother didn't have any children, he said, the dynasty will not, the Jacob's dynasty will not continue. It's kind of an interesting statement. You know, our bloodline is finished. Anyway, so I thought that quite interesting because who's interested in that dynasty? So that's one reason. Another reason is that the Kshatriya definitely wants someone to perform pinda after he dies. First of all, there's the funeral ceremony. The son is supposed to perform the funeral ceremony for the father. But then even after that, there's the pinda, you know, the offering to the forefathers that's done on a regular basis and keeps the forefather out of hell. Therefore, the son is called Putra. Putra means he who saves someone from hell. Putrayate. Put means hell, trayate. Of course, like that's the word mantra. That frees the mind and also frees the forefather from put or hell, putra. So that's actually very important. There's an interesting story in the Mahabharata. Since yesterday we were thinking about the Mahabharata a lot and the events that led up to the Kurukshetra War. So there's an interesting story in the Mahabharata that illustrates this point. And this story is after the Battle of Kurukshetra, way after the Battle of Kurukshetra. There's Maharaj Janamejaya. And Maharaj Janamejaya is the son of Parikshit Maharaj, and Maharaj Janamejaya wants to perform the Sarpo Yajna, in other words, to kill all the snakes. So the snakes wanted to have a particular strategy to stop all the snakes from being killed. So this is the context of that particular story. So what happened is that there was this great sage, his name was Jarakaru. And Jarakaru, he just wanted to be a brahmachari. He didn't want anything to do with getting married or having progeny or anything like that. So he's just minding his own business, this poor sage. And as he's minding his own business, he comes across a whole bunch of people hanging upside down over a well. This is sort of a metaphorical thing. And they're like older people hanging upside down. There's a rope holding them and there's a rat eating the rope. So in other words, after the rope gets eaten enough, they drop down into the well. So he sees them, and he says, you know, why are you there? I mean, like I said, it's metaphorical, because he doesn't just, like, grab them out and take them out of the well at a particular point. So it's a metaphorical story, obviously. So he says, my dear sirs, why are you there? And they say, you know, we're here because we have a descendant who's not performing pinda. And because he's not performing pinda, you know, we're going to go to hell very, very soon. We're the forefathers of this particular individual. And Jarakaru, being very inquisitive, says, who is that descendant who's not doing that? You know, what's his name? You know, maybe I'll talk to him. And they say it to him, his name is Jarakaru. So this poor guy has the shock of his life. You know, he had a whole plan not to get married, just to be simple and everything. And he says, oh my God, that's me. So what am I going to do? And he thinks, well, it's my duty to save these particular individuals, but still, you know, I just don't really want to get entangled. So he sort of makes a deal. He says, look, I will get married and have children only if I can marry someone, a wife with the same name as me. And, you know, it's highly unlikely you're going to get a wife with the same name as you have. You know, highly unlikely, because women's names and men's names generally are a little bit different. Like, Hidimba, Hidimbi, you know. That's very similar. But they're not married. Of course, that's brother and sister from the Mahabharata, Bhakshasas. So he was going on his merry way, And Vasuki, he had a plan. Vasuki had a daughter, not daughter, a sister, sorry. Vasuki was one of the good snake people, the sons of Kudru. You know, Kudru was the mother of all the snakes. She had some good snakes. I mean, Seishi's one of her children, and of course, Vasuki is also quite pious. So, and these snakes could take human form. It's not that they always look like snakes. They actually look like humans quite a bit of the time. They could change their form. So he had a sister, and he said that the sister's name should be Jarikaru. So this Jarikaru is going along thinking, boy, I tricked these forefathers, Haribo. So he's walking along in the woods and then says, oh, well, there's, you know, I'm getting a little old. There's one more chance. He sort of yells out, if anyone's called Jarikaru, it's your last chance to get married. And Vasuki comes with his daughter and says, hey, I got a girl for you. And Vasuki presents Jarikaru with this girl, Jarikaru. And he says, oh my God, I've been tricked. You know, so he says, but I have another condition too, another prenuptial agreement, that you can never say anything that disturbs me, it makes me upset. So anyway, there's an agreement. Yes, he said, if that happens, I'm leaving immediately. That's sort of like the whole story about Shantanu and Ganga Devi too, from the reverse angle. You know, here's the man who wants to leave immediately instead of the woman leaving immediately. So anyway, so they get married and they live nice, I think, for about a year or something. And then ultimately, he doesn't wake up when it's time to perform his particular sacrifice, you know, the sanjas. Sanja means the three times of the day, sunrise, noon, sunset. And it's getting time or getting late for him to perform this particular ceremony. You know, I mean, Brahmins generally, they do either a fire sacrifice or certain mantras, they worship the sun god or something during the sanjas. Otherwise, it's considered they've broken their regulated principles. So what happens is that he doesn't wake up, and his wife, thinking, you know, what can I do? You know, if I wake him up, he may get a little cranky and get upset with me and leave. And if I don't wake him up, he's going to destroy his religious principles. So she has this dilemma there, which is called a lose-lose again. Lose-lose conflict. She doesn't think of out of the box of a way to do it, you know, having someone else wake him up. That's it. That would be a win. So anyway, so what happens is that she sort of touches him, says, honey bunch, please get up. It's time. Just do your sanjas. You know, sometimes when people get up, they're a little cranky. If they wake up on the wrong side of the puja in the morning. So he wakes up and says, ah! You woman, you disturb me. I'm leaving. And so he leaves and gets ready, you know, just starts walking out. And she says, but we're supposed to have a child. And then he says, Ashtika. And sort of giving the name of the child, but that means there will be a child. It's a famous story from the Mahabharata. Some of you may have heard this story before. Anyway, so he walks out and she has the child. And the rest of the story is this Ashtika, being a Brahmin, he walks in on the sacrifice that Janamejaya is doing. You know, he's calling all the snakes to fall in the fire. Actually, he wants Takshaka to come in the fire. But Takshaka is being sheltered by Indra. Indra's taking care of him. So he gets very upset because Takshaka is not falling in the fire. Because Takshaka was the one who killed his father. He bit Maharaj Pariksit. So he says to the Brahmins, what are we going to do? The Brahmins said, we have this other mantra we can chant that lets Takshaka fall into the fire along with Indra. So they chant this mantra, may Takshaka and his protector Indra fall into the fire. So they're just like hovering over there. And then Ashtika enters in the assembly, and it's similar to Lord Vamanadeva's story in Bali Maharaj. And then Maharaj Janamejaya receives him and says, oh my dear Brahmana, what do you want? And Ashtika says, stop the sacrifice. All right. And there Poor Janmanjaya is frustrated because he can't kill the killer of his father. So anyway, he stops the sacrifice and all the snakes are saved. Interesting story, isn't it? What's that?
Would you be willing to move the microphone
closer?
Yeah, Kali Krishna can't hear downstairs when you're close to the microphone.
All right, you can hear now?
Yeah, I mean, up here it might be a little loud.
It's really loud up
here. Yeah, it is loud.
That's why I'm not right at the microphone.
So we can turn the sound down up here, maybe.
Yeah, could you do that? Astika. Astika is the kid's name.
Yeah.
And then, anyway, so the snakes are saved. So, anyway, there's a story. Can they hear it downstairs now?
I think as long as the microphone is close, they can hear it.
Okay.
We can turn it down here if it's...
Okay, this is all right here now. So they, anyway, so Astika is actually saving the snakes. Anyway, so that's a story about how Charankara was forced to get married, and his descendants were his, not his descendants, but his ancestors were saved, and he was able to save the snakes. So it's very important in the Vedic conception to have sons or putris, you know, putri means ladies, or someone who could represent you to perform this pinda ceremony. Of course, in Krishna consciousness, we are not that concerned with it, because if we chant Hare Krishna, we can overcome all the different sins that we may have committed, even if we chant Nama Bash, what to speak of Shuddha Nama, chanting. And of course, this was actually brought out in a very interesting conversation in the Jiva Dharma between this Devadas and Vaishnavadas. Remember this conversation? It's interesting. Because what happened is this... Devadas is a ritualistic Brahmin, and he's really upset that his father has taken up Krishna consciousness. And what he's really upset at this point with is that his father is not only hanging out with the Vaishnavas, but there happened to be a descendant of the Kazi, who Lord Chaitanya converted to Krishna consciousness, who comes into the assembly of the Vaishnavas, and the Vaishnavas treat him with respect and have a philosophical discussion with him. You know, this is really upsetting for a ritualistic Brahmin, isn't it? It just agitates the hell out of him. You know, he's ready. He starts insulting people, you know, all sorts of things like that. And this Kazi is actually a Vaishnava. You know, he believes in Lord Chaitanya, chants Hare Krishna, does everything like that. It's just he follows the social norms of his Muslim tradition. And so there's this whole discussion there about the superiority of Brahmins or Vaishnavas, and of course it's understood in ordinary social conventions, we should follow ordinary social conventions, which is an interesting discussion. Instruction by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur that if you're in a particular country, this is a Krishna West point, that if you're in a particular country, like, you know, you shake hands with people, generally you should marry people of your same caste, because, you know, it's just practical, similar psychology, there won't be a disruption in society. So Vaishnavas should observe social conventions that don't really obstruct their Krishna consciousness. I found that quite an interesting point that Bhaktivinoda Thakur made in the Jiva Dharma. But, however, the point is that the Muslim is no longer sinful because he's chanting Lord's holy names. So that was the real point Bhaktivinoda Thakur, most important point Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making, that he's should not be considered according to his material designation insofar as spiritual activities are concerned. Insofar as social activities, yes, that's a different thing. Or, you know, ritualistic Brahminical stuff, or performing fire sacrifices or stuff like that. Like, in the Krishna consciousness movement, we don't perform Vedic fire sacrifices, you know, because we're born in a certain family or whatever, you know, at least myself. We don't have the adhikar to perform these traditional Vedic sacrifices, like Ashwamedha, Gomedha, and all those other sacrifices, but we have the adhikar to perform Vaishnava sacrifices. We follow the Pancharatriki system, not the Vedic system. So, anyway, that point is made. So in other words, when one chants the holy names engaged in Krishna consciousness, then spiritually they're equal. And spiritually you overcome all the different karma that you may have. So you really don't have to worry about the pinda or the putras or anything like that. Of course, if you preach Krishna consciousness, then you can have plenty of putras and who trees to chant Hare Krishna for you. You know, when you pass away, they'll pray for you. So anyway, so therefore we don't have to worry so much about this particular system because we're following the Pancharatriki system and Bhagavad-vidhi system. Bhagavad-vidhi is actually much more important than Pancharatriki system. So that's one point. Another point I wanted to make in regard to this particular verse and purport was that we really have to be satisfied with what Krishna sends us. I mean, so many times we want more and we try for more and it doesn't happen. Like King Trichaketu, he was really trying for more. And it should have been obvious to him, you know, after 3 to 5 wives,
yeah.
it should have been a no-brainer. You're not supposed to have children, Trichaketu. I mean, I can understand first wife, second wife, yeah, you try. Third wife, maybe. Fourth wife, well, maybe Krishna's saying something to me. And fifth wife, Hare Krishna. You know, it's time to forget about having children. But in Chitraketu, he didn't. This reflects very much on us too, and others too, where we're not satisfied with our quota. You know, this verse in the Isha Upanishad, Isha Basham Idam Sarvam Yakincha Chakacham Jagat Tina Chaktena Punjita Madhurhat Kasha Svidnanam. Of course, everything is owned and controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But then the second part is that people have a particular quota in this lifetime. Of course, this quota is only external. In spiritual life, there's no limitation. There's no quota in spiritual life. In other words, devotional service, there's no impediment and there's no prerequisite in devotional service. So the sky's the limit, and more than the sky's the limit in devotional service. But externally, you know, we do have limitations. You know, it may be physical limitations, psychological limitations. Someone may be blind, like Dhritarashtra, for example. I'm not saying that he was performing devotional service, but he was blind, and he wanted something that wasn't his quota. That really was one of the main causes of the whole conflagration. Of course, the ultimate cause is Krishna wanted everyone to kill each other, all the demons. But, you know, take an intermediate cause that he should have just been satisfied. You know, this is not my quota. You know, I'm blind, I'm not supposed to be the king, you know, then let me perform devotional service. I can go back to Godhead and have spiritual vision. Like that. And then you have the story of Dronacharya, who also wasn't satisfied with his quota. As we mentioned last night, and you know, basically his son couldn't have milk. They had to mix chalk or some white substance with water and gave his son this, and they laughed at his son. But it wasn't his quota because he had to violate Dharma to try to achieve more than his quota. You know, he had to take employment, become just like a menial servant of his desire for more. And of course, that in devotional service is called over-endeavor. Like Srila Rupa Goswami says, collecting too much, over-endeavoring, like that, or prajalpa, etc. That is one of the causes of fall down in devotional service. You know, that you have a particular quota. And, you know, even like collecting too much, let's say a devotee wants... I mean, of course, for Krishna we can collect. But if a devotee loses his sadhana, his bhakti, because he's interested in money that he's not meant to have, what's the use of such a thing? It's a cause of a fall down in devotional service. So the sadhana always has to be the first priority. And then, you know, and even it's recommended, one should be very enthusiastic, especially for sannyasi, building big temples. You know, obviously, you know, just like we're trying to build a temple. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But, you know, I could actually just like become just like a businessman, you know, Jewish businessman, and make the money to raise it, you know, just dedicate my whole life to collecting $4 or $5 million. And, you know, I think I could do it, but at the same time, you know, where would my spiritual eyesight and everything else go? You wouldn't see me for several years. And, You know, so that's the point, whether it's our quota or not. You know, physically, psychologically, financially, married life with the children, no children, disciples, no disciples, you know, whatever, you know, abilities, you know, whether it's musical abilities or ability to dance. Like when I was young, they kicked me out of dancing school because I stepped on everyone's toes. So, you know, it just wasn't my quota. So the point I'm making is that we should be satisfied and then just preach with whatever facility we have in Krishna consciousness, and don't be envious that someone else has more than me. You know, someone has a Mercedes and I only have a Prius. So, yeah, this is the point. So getting back to Chitraketu, he should have just been satisfied and just done his services and seen Krishna. In other words, to see Krishna behind things. Krishna understands what's good for us. So I guess on that happy point, any questions or comments? Yeah.
How are we to determine what our quota is? I mean, somebody says, you
know. Yeah. Well, we have association with devotees. I mean, it's just, for example, if Chitraketu would talk to other Vaishnavas and said, you know, I've married like, let's say up to 10 wives. Do you think I should marry any more? You know, what would the Brahmins naturally say? The Brahmins would say, I think you've tried enough. It's really not. So when we take association, but we come up blinded by our desires. So what did they say? Upadesho himurkanam prakopayana shantaye. If someone gives us good instructions, we don't, not only do we not accept those instructions if we're really attached to something, but we get angry at them instead of accepting the instructions. So Chitraketu obviously, I mean, it's not mentioned here, but obviously did not accept so much advice. You know, go around to the Brahmins and say, you know what, because a Brahmin, you know, a real Brahmin, not just like someone who's taking a salary, because someone who's taking a salary will tell you what you want to hear. This is what Vibhishan mentions to Ravana. He says, you know, I'm really a well-wisher, not your son, because, you know, I'm going to tell you what's good for you, not what you want to hear. So someone who tells you what's good for you, like, you get advice. Those are the people you should get advice from, not employees. Like, for example, like a guru should not get advice from the disciples. You know, unless ordinary things, you know, how do I drive a car or something. But, you know, because they're going to be inclined to tell you something that will be pleasing to you. So you go to people who are, you know, peers. Or you go to your own guru. Or you go to Brahmins, you know, detached Brahmins. You ask for advice, you know. Do you think I should get married again, you know, to more ladies? And Chitraketu would have, I'm sure they would have said, you know, I think you've exhausted your quota. So I think that's how we determine it. But you have to be ready to hear from others. And we find that those who deviate from Krishna consciousness, in many cases, they don't have association and they can't hear advice from others. They isolate. Isolation. So I'm sort of guessing on, you know, Chitraketu's situation, because using intelligence, you can do intellectual speculation, intelligent speculation instead of mental speculation. If he had gotten advice from Brahmins who were detached, I'm sure they would have given him the right advice. Or Vaishnavas. Okay, on that happy note, whatever our quote is.
We have no story.
What's that?
We have no story.
No story.